Josh asked me, what shall we talk about? We were talking yesterday, and I said, well, the three refuges have been on my mind lately. And he said, oh, that's interesting. Here's what's been on my mind. And it was a passage out of Dogen. And it seemed to me that there was a way that they both met somewhere for me. So I'm going to start with my starting point and see if we get to Josh's. I think we will. The three refuges are, I take refuge in Buddha, I take refuge in Dharma, I take refuge in Sangha, that we chant in every liturgy period. And it's never really struck me as a particularly strong chant, you know, one that really comes forward for me. It's a very simple one, honestly, liturgy has not been a big focus for me all along, which is why I was the chant leader for so long. particularly about the three refuges, I remember that when I was 16 and first interested in Buddhism, I sent for a bunch of books from the Vedanta Society. This is pre-internet, like pre-internet. And somehow I got hold of their address and that they had these books, and so I sent for one. And it was the doctrines of Buddhism, and on one side it was in Chinese, and on the other side it had been translated into English. And they had some of the chants in there, and the three refuges were there. And sometime, I still have the book, I've kept it all these years, and sometime after I began practicing here with Boundless Way, I went back and looked through that old book, and I came upon the three refuges. And they even had the music to go with it, and it's done exactly the same way that we do it, you know, with the intonations up and down. And it sort of gave me goosebumps when I saw that. It's like, you know, this connection with generations and, you know, hundreds of years that people have been chanting in this way that we do. I really felt as though their voice came through our voices as we chanted. And all this by way of entering into a kayaking story. So I haven't done one of these for a while, and those of you who have known me for a while know that kayaking, sea kayaking particularly, has been a passion for some time. And recently, in the mid-September, for 2 weeks, I had the opportunity to take a trip up to Newfoundland. I've been there twice before for sea kayaking, and this time, I really wanted to see the South Coast. Very difficult to get there because there are no roads on the South Coast. Just a ferry that will take you from one little outpost to another. However, there is a way to go from the main ferry that goes to the island of Newfoundland, and then the Trans-Canada Highway runs north, all the way north, all the way across the northern coast, and then down to St. John's. And there's one road that drops down from that to the area that I wanted to kayak in. There's nothing at all on that road on the way. No gas stations, no signs. Well, there are signs like beware of potholes or moose. There's no buildings, no side roads. There's just one road that goes down the center of the entire island to the far south coast. So it took me 3 days to get from here to there, but finally I did arrive at Fortune Bay, the area that I had chosen to kayak in, and I had planned to kayak camp there for 7 days, which is what I did. And it's a very, very beautiful place, incredibly beautiful, and they always keep the best places far away, and it's really true this time. Great mounds of granite and dense spruce forest at the base, and the bay, everything about Newfoundland is called the Rock because basically it's just gigantic hunks of rock where plants have found, you know, a little bit of place to grow here and there. And it's really a harsh environment, very austere. And so this area had been carved out by glaciers, and you could tell, like, the mountains came down to the ocean and they just went straight in. There was no beach, there was no meadow, nothing like that. So one of the challenges is always to find somewhere to land, you know, because it's just cliff and cliff and cliff. I spent a long time before I went with Google Earth looking at the images from above and circling think maybe I could land there, you know? Mm-hmm. Maybe that will hold a tent. Mm-hmm. Just finding out anything I could about that area. And so I started out from this little outpost called Pool's Cove and headed out. And the trip went very well. I mean, I was really lucky with the weather. There was 3 sunny days in a row, which is probably a record for Newfoundland. It's usually, you know, fog and mist and rain and wind and cold. And so it was going great. And so one of the things that I would do when there was a long crossing, if I had at least a mile of open water to cross, which is kind of boring, you know, like if you're on the land, you can look at stuff, but if you're just out surrounded by water, there's just water and every stroke seems the same. And so I decided that one way that I could integrate my practice into this vacation was to do the liturgy service as I made the crossing. And 15 minutes was just about right from the Gata of Atonement to the dedications. Mm-hmm. I could make a mile in 15 minutes. So every mile I could do that segment of. And you know, I knew from my chart about how long I had to go. So all right, I can do the liturgy twice on this one, right? And it didn't really sound like the liturgy so much because it was like, you know, fitting it into my breath. So, you know, like that. It didn't matter because only me listening, so it was okay. And this is a as I had said, a very isolated place. Every now and then you would see a fishing shack where people would go on the weekends. They'd, you know, head out there. I only ever saw, the entire week I was there, only talked with people twice. Once was, because it's the only time I was close to people, once was someone who came by in a little runabout, and I was standing on the shore, and he came over, he couldn't see my boat, and he asked if I was stranded. That was the extent of that conversation. And then the other one was a fishing boat came by, and 2 guys were on it, and they came over and stopped the boat and said, "Are you the person who was out on that island last night?" I said, "Yes, that was me." And he said, "Well, where's the rest of your group?" I said, "It's just me, but I'm being very careful." And that was the extent of that conversation. So in a way, the 7 days was kind of like a retreat, you know, where you just, you've got yourself and, you know, the world. And everything is very, very simple. Just as in retreat, where you don't have to think about going to work or, you know, the many zillion things that occupy you during the day. It was, what am I going to eat? Where am I going to land? How am I going to get there? It's pretty much, that was it, you know, those 3 things. And so it was all very simple and clear. So my week went along, and it's just beautiful places and very lucky with the weather. And then one day, the forecast was for heavy winds and rain and fog. And so I thought I'd better head into somewhere that had a little bit more protection. I was out on an island at the time. And so I did that, and it was indeed very windy. It was like 30 knots, and we had to be kind of careful about it. But there were many bays that came off of the main bay, and so I figured I would go into one of those, and that would give me some protection. So I headed into this bay. This was so wonderful. So at the beginning, at the opening of the bay, as I'm paddling toward it, this great rainbow appears that arcs across the entire entrance of the bay. It's like, they knew I was coming? I don't know. Awesome. You know, it's an invitation. I'll go. It's just so splendid. And so I went all the way back into the back of that bay, and it ended in kind of a marshy area. And I still had a lot of my day left to paddle, and there was definitely nowhere that I could get out there. And it's just, there was no flat land. So I thought that I would continue out the other side of the bay, which I knew, having gone past it and seeing it on the charts, it's all cliff. It's just solid cliff, like 500 to 1,000 feet, right? It's rock. So there would be no getting out once I started down that stretch, and it's several miles to get out. And then it would be around the promontory of this great headland, which is also cliff, and into the next bay, where I thought perhaps I could find somewhere to camp for the night. And since the wind was blowing in that direction, I thought, how hard can it be? Well, I miscalculate a little, and as I down this row of this several miles of solid cliff, I realized that the wind within the bay, as I headed out, it got stronger and stronger, and it was pushing me into the cliff. And that I needed to really pay attention to every stroke. A couple of times, actually, the waves, it wasn't big waves, because it was back in a bay, but you know, a couple feet, and that they would pick up the boat and start to head it toward the cliff. And I have to put on the brakes really fast, you know, and say some expletives and get myself straightened out again. Oh, I didn't mention that I had managed to pack my lunch that day. Usually I kept it in the hatch right behind my seat so that I could open the hatch and pull out something to eat, even though there was nowhere to land. On this day, I had accidentally packed it in the front hatch way up there behind everything else that I had put into the hatch. There was no way to get it. So I was pretty hungry. I'd been going for a couple of hours, and here I was battling against the wind and getting very, very tired. And the end of this promontory was like, you know, still a mile out there, and then I had to go across the face of it. And so I thought, that's a good time for a liturgy service. and I started to chant the liturgy. And I did the Gatha of Atonement, you know, and okay, that really is not terribly comforting, you know, like it's I did everything wrong and I really deserve this, I don't know. and then I got to the three refuges, and I went through the three refuges, and I found that I didn't want to go past that, and so I just kept on with the three refuges over and over and over. Just the English part, I take refuge in Buddha, I take refuge in Dharma, I take refuge in Sangha. As I got out farther and farther toward the mouth of the bay, the wind was stronger and stronger. I was more and more tired, and I'm just chanting as I go along, chanting. And I realized that I was, well, this brings us to Josh's Dogen quote. This is a splendid opportunity for Buddha Dharma to enter into mud and water. If you do not realize the fruit at this moment, when will you realize it? If you do not cut off delusion at this moment, when will you cut it off? If you do not become a Buddha at this moment, when will you? If you do not sit as a Buddha at this moment, when will you practice as a Buddha? I can assure you I did not feel like a Buddha at that moment. And my practice, I felt this chanting. I recognized that I was wielding it, really, as a sort of shield. Like, I wanted refuge from what was going on. You know, it was a little frightening. And I knew that this was not really how we enter into the liturgy, but it was how I did it at that moment. And so I'm chanting it and hoping for refuge, right? I want refuge from all this stuff, you know, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, I don't care which one, just somebody. And going with it. And the strange thing is that the liturgy itself seemed to show me the way, which was that as I chanted it and as I recognized how I was trying to hold it up as a shield before me, somehow the realization opened up for me that this was the refuge, right here where I was, in the midst of this exhaustion and this sort of battering by the wind and the elements and the tiredness of the days of being on the water. This was my story. This was my life that was taking place right now. And there was refuge in that, that whatever happened next would be the next part of my story. And that I would respond to that. And then what happened next after that would be the next part of my story. And I would respond to that. The refuge was right there where I was. And it didn't help me to get around the cliffs and so forth, except that I wasn't struggling against it anymore. It was simply what was happening in the moment. And what I thought was so wonderful about this is that I entered into this chanting of the refuges from where I was, certainly not as Dogen was describing it, you know, as a Buddha, as being just with this moment. Just entering where I was, that was good enough. And that then the practice itself took me beyond that, took me to the true refuge, to the understanding of it. So I did make it around the corner and found a lovely happy ending. Found a lovely beach there and decided I wasn't going any farther and stayed there the evening. And the trip was fantastic. So I think I'd just like to read over that segment once more before I turn it to Josh. This is a splendid opportunity for Buddha Dharma to enter into mud and water. Nothing glorious, nothing glistening, mud and water. If you do not realize the fruit at this moment, when will you realize it? If you do not cut off delusion at this moment, when will you cut it off? If you do not become a Buddha at this moment, when will you? If you do not sit as a Buddha at this moment, when will you practice as a Buddha?
I love this image of refuge. In a way, when you were using Google Earth to look for a place to land, and I think this is a great image for what the metaphor of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha is. It is a place for us to land, a place for us to find orientation and a kind of safety amid the storms of life. You mentioned using the refuges as a kind of shield, and this is actually a traditional metaphor from Theravadan Buddhism, that the Dharma as a shield, the Dharma as an umbrella, and this is one meaning of refuge. And the way that we and our practice is not about insulating ourselves from the world, you know. So in a way, this shield is a completely penetrable shield, a completely penetrable umbrella. You know, one of the great bait and switches of Dharma practice is that we all come to the Dharma. We all come to practice for some version of to have better and stronger armor to insulate us from the slings and arrows of the world. And in fact, what we come to discover is that actually we don't even need the crappy armor that we have. That actually we don't need to prevent ourselves from feeling pain. We don't need to prevent ourselves from experiencing suffering, and that actually letting it in is a path to liberation amid the storms, liberation amid the suffering. And so we can set down even our crappy armor, and use instead this completely penetrable shield, this completely penetrable umbrella. You know, and this is in a way related to the line in the English version of the Kanzaiyon Sutra, where we say this Buddha receives only compassion. And when we say that, it's not, no, sorry, I'm only taking compassion right now. Keep that to yourself. It's more of an alchemical transformation, that whatever comes in, whatever passes through this shield, is received as compassion. And as Tori Enji said in our verse today, and then how can we be ungrateful to anyone or anything? Whatever arises, we can receive as the Buddha appearing to us, finding ways to free us amid our suffering. So this taking refuge, this taking refuge is something we all need to do. This practice is not something that we can do alone, any of us. And one of the recitations that we do says, this is not something we can do ourselves, and no one else can do it for us. The only way this is done is together. The only way this is done is in the context of the Sangha treasure. And the Sangha is most manifest to us when we come together to support each other in silent sitting or to discuss Dharma works. It's most manifest there, but we're really with the Sangha continually. And taking refuge in the Dharma. So I find the Dharma to be such a beautiful and inspiring and helpful system for making sense of the inner and outer world and the relation between them. And you know, it's so orienting to me. And this is the Dharma that I take refuge in. And so what is this taking refuge in Buddha? So in the Zen tradition, it isn't taking refuge in that guy over there, that dude who lived 2,500 years ago. It has nothing to do with that. Although we can also appreciate the path that, you know, the historical Buddha described what he did is he walked through a forest and he walked back and forth along the same path to make a trail visible to us so that it would be easier for us to follow through these woods. But and so we can appreciate in gratitude the efforts of those people on the path who came before us, who maintained pointers to this path that we ourselves can walk. But Dogen's pointing to another really important thing. This is a splendid opportunity for Buddha Dharma to enter into mud and water. If you do not realize the fruit at this moment, when will you realize it? If you do not cut off delusion at this moment, when will you cut it off? If you do not become a Buddha at this moment, when will you? And this is a description of the moment-to-moment practice of Zazen. This is the description of the moment-to-moment practice of meeting our messy human life. And so, if you do not cut off delusion at this moment, when will you cut it off? And let us not imagine that if you do cut off this delusion in this moment, then you're all set. That's not true. Then you need to cut off delusion in this moment. And in this moment. If you do not become a Buddha at this moment, when will you? And this matter of becoming is maybe a little muddy. There's a koan in which a student asks a teacher, "How can I become a Buddha?" And the teacher grabs a stone and starts polishing it. And the student says, "What are you doing?" And he says, I'm trying to make a mirror from this stone." And this business of becoming a Buddha isn't a special thing, and it isn't a state other than this. So we might hear this as, if you do not sit in this moment as a Buddha, in fact, that's what he says, if you do not sit as a Buddha, this is becoming a Buddha. This is recognizing that Buddha isn't something you need to become. This is recognizing that all of this already is arising as the Buddha Dharma, as the Sangha treasure, as the Dharma of thusness, sitting in this moment as a Buddha. So what about when what arises for us is fear? What about when arises for us is self-hatred? What about what arises for us is doubt. How can we sit as a Buddha then? We sit as a Buddha of fear. We sit as a Buddha of self-hatred. We sit as a Buddha of doubt. Even that is Buddha arising. We can take refuge even there in the Dharma. This little verse from this little passage from Dogen reminds me of a little micro verse I once wrote. Regarding practice. If not this, what? If not now, when? If not me, who? And I love how Dogen concludes this passage with, diligently examine this in detail. What an encouragement. Really explore the Buddha of each moment. Diligently examine the Dharma of each moment. Diligently examine the refuge of Sangha. This is such a precious thing, this opportunity to support others and be supported in our practice of the path. Such a precious thing. What a miracle. So, we want to invite folks to come forward with resonances or questions or comments or anything that arises for you.
Thank you so much for the story. I was really just following along with you. I mean, it was very vivid for me to be out there. You did a wonderful job of inviting all of us to be there along with you. And what a great metaphor, the idea of refuge, you know, that you are looking for refuge in a literal way. And what I was struck by with your explanation and pairing it with what Dogen was saying and talking about that is, I think I've seen refuge as a good thing in that it's a way to hide. It's a way to not necessarily appear in the world. And it can, I think, take that connotation, right? In our world, refugee is someone who's hiding perhaps from being attacked, but regardless. And this is, refuge is from what you were talking about, is almost appearing more in the world, which is counterintuitive in my mind. So I really appreciated how you unfolded that and turned the building and made it very clear to me and very real. So thank you.
So you know I have to put in my walking in the woods and all this.
Yeah.
And also, it maybe says something about me how you describe this kind of harrowing episode. And I'm thinking, boy, I want to try sea kayak. Something not quite right with me. But I in the beginning of September, I went on a backpacking trip, and I went out for a few days. And on the last day, I was worried about, I skipped my last camp because I was worried about getting water. It was very dry and had problems with the last camp I was at and to like dig a hole and stuff. Like, I don't know. And it was a thunderstorm threatening, so I said, I'm just gonna hike out the 12 and a half miles back to my car. Mm. And so I was on that thought and it didn't quite completely beat the rain. It came down a little heavy in the morning and I was getting all muddy, and this was a pretty up and down trail. And I got the last real ridge, about the 11 mile mark, it was pretty steep, and I just, I just gonna get to my car, and I just pushed on, and I had, you know, 30 pounds on my back, and I just sort of pushed on up the hill, and I got to the top of the hill, and I was just totally like, you know, just trying to catch my breath. I sat in a rock, and then it just struck me, I was like, wow, what am I doing? You know, it's all muddy, and I'm thinking how horrible it is, and I'm, this is such a beautiful place, and I'm just thinking about myself and getting out of the difficulties, and and I just sat there feeling like, you know, that's horrible. I missed everything, and I'm breathing, and I'm breathing, and I'm going. And then suddenly just struck me, no, this is it. This is me appreciating the mountain, the ridge that I just climbed up. And I'm staring at these beautiful, you know, the rock, you know, how the rocks in the White Mountains can sort of be layered, and you have the intricate little places with growth is coming, and I'm just breathing heavy, looking at that, and going, wow, no, this is, I'm right here now, and this breathing heavy, this being muddy and wet, just how it came up. And I didn't think of it as, you know, in terms of refuge, but that is exactly, yeah, that was it. So thank you for putting that perspective.
You recognized it as a splendid opportunity for the Buddha Dharma to enter into mud and water.
Yeah. And the Dogen guy might have some.
Yeah, you're right. Your story, when you talked about the chanting being the shield, and you realized the refuge was in your activity at the moment, resonated with a line from the C.S. Lewis, Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe series. And I can't remember if it was pointed out to me or I just came on it myself, but there's a scene in which these kids that are battling forces of evil are getting ready for this big showdown. And Aslan, the kind of Jesus figure, wise, you know, lion, in the story, they're talking to Aslan, and you know, they want Aslan to give them the battle plan, you know, tell them, you know, how this is going to come down, what they should do, whatever. And Aslan says, go and deal with what you will find there. That's it. I mean, yeah. Go, wake up, notice what's going on, and do it. And you know, it's kind of one of those, oh, okay. But I often think of that as you know, what are the words of wisdom in that situation of distress, and what am I going to do?
There's maybe one further thing that could be added, and that is that whichever way it turns out, it's okay. Even though your idea of, like, you know, if I'm injured or die, that's not okay. Mm-hmm. But in a way, that too, it's just the next thing to deal with, or, you know, not dead. But
I really appreciated what you had to say about, you know, holding up the shield, but then the shield is porous. Mm.
Needing refuge and finding it, I really had a strong feeling of being embedded, you know, like not me and then something that will come and intercede from, you know, stand between me and all of that, but that it was all one big happening at once. So.
It's not to say that that same feeling would come up for me too. Someone would just get me out of this right now.
yeah.
That comes up just as much as.
Right. Yeah, and that's a fine place to enter in.
In a sense, refuge in the Zen path and the Mahayana Buddhist path is opting in rather than opting out. Opting into this big mess. Opting into the difficulties and muddiness of being human.
I think I always enjoyed that chant because I love that concept of refuge. It sounds so comforting. Mm-hmm. And but over time realizing that it's not what I thought, it's not the kind of comfort I thought, but mm-hmm. even that there's comfort in opting in
right.
is really wonderful.
Yeah.
But as I was listening to the stories, I know I go walking at Brickhart frequently on the weekends and find myself really noting. It's always wonderful to be outside and how that feels, it's energizing and it feels calming. But then I had this experience yesterday at work, and I work with people, youth with multiple disabilities, but all of them have visual impairment. And I had to take them all for an interview, and some mayhem ensued in the midst of the interviews. And as we were returning to the vehicle, I was thinking, what could I have done differently? Were they not prepared? You know, just. And then a woman that was walking in the parking lot fell, and she was quite large, and she was mortified. She was mortified. Like it was so. It's so heartbreaking mm-hmm. to see someone feeling embarrassed. Mm-hmm. You know, like I think I was worried that she was okay, but then the double, oh my God, I don't want you to feel embarrassed right now, like that. And so I guess thinking that kept coming up for me in sitting today. But I was thinking how you don't have to be kayaking or walking in the woods. Like it's every. It's all the time. It's
yeah.
And sometimes I think I'm getting real when I'm walking in the woods, and it's like, wow, woman, I don't know, but it's just all just coming up as I was listening to everything.
Yeah.
Doesn't depend on the particular conditions.
Yes.
Must be calm and outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't depend.
Yeah, calm and outdoors is one place we find it, and still and indoors is another place we find it. And what practicing in these places where it's easy does is strengthens our capacity to touch that same thing in the more complex and difficult areas where it's not so easy. And I really appreciate what you said at the beginning that the refuge that you found wasn't the one you were looking for. But I want to underscore, it's real refuge. The liberation in Zen is real. It's just not what we imagine.
So this kind of reminded me of my own sort of floating refuge, right? I have a cheap raft, and I take it out on the Charles. But the segment of the Charles that I go onto, it has no docks, because it's full of weeds and everything. But when I'm kind of walking down there with a friend, and we're carrying a boat and tossing in the water, it's a sort of attitude we have where like, oh, this, we're totally separating ourselves from everything else we'd otherwise have to think about.
Yep.
And that kind of attitude makes a lot of other things more or less okay.
Yeah.
Like, so for example, because there are no ducks, we have to kind of navigate through the mud that's sort of in between solid ground and water. And, myself and my friends often get like knee deep in Charles
uh-huh.
River mud
yep.
and loose flip-flops and whatever. But that in the moment is much easier to deal with, just because I think the attitude that we take
mm-hmm.
When going into that.
entering in mud and water.
So, for the remainder of the morning, as we walk, as we sit, as we meet each other in Doksan, I want to encourage you to sit as a Buddha in this moment. Practice as a Buddha with each step. Entrust yourself to the Dharma. Entrust yourself to this Buddha nature that has nothing to do with how you're doing right now. Entrust yourself to this liberation that is much bigger than the content of your consciousness. Sit as a Buddha in this moment. Thank you.